And tonight, all the way from, what was it, Midtown? We have Ken. Please welcome
Ken. Hi, my name's Ken. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ken.
My sobriety date is February 3rd, 2013. I have a sponsor who texted me right before I started. And I have a home group. It is the Midtown Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet every Sunday in over in Montgomery County, Maryland, various locations. Right now it's at a high school. Which one is it again?
Walter
Johnson High School right now, from 7:30 to 9 o'clock. If you find yourself over there, you know, please do come by. It's a little bit bigger than here, but thankfully everyone there has what we have here too, right? And that's alcoholism. And thankfully as well, just like here, whether it's in, you know, Madison, Virginia, Rockville, Maryland, or where I grew up in Du Bois, Pennsylvania, the solution's the same for alcoholism, right? you know, thank you, Billy, for asking me to be here tonight. You know, when we started to talk at the beginning of the meeting, or not the beginning of the meeting, that's right now, right? So before the meeting started, when we were talking, you know, you mentioned like Frank B had been here before, you know, Mike Q had been here in the past years ago. These are guys that I only know their names. I never met them. I never had a conversation with them. I've met the people they sponsored, but just like what we're doing in this book, the thing that I've had the privilege of participating in is their legacy, right? It's what they taught someone else and that I've been able to pick up and learn from someone else. And I've had the privilege of showing other people. It might not be sponsorship directly, right? I've had plenty of people ask me. I've done it in name only for them, you know, and they've gotten what they want. I do have someone right now that I'm very fortunate to sponsor actively, calls me regularly. And we, you know, we're going through the steps right now, and I'll talk more about that later. It's an interesting dynamic. You know, I opened up. I got sober in 2013. This guy had 21 years sober when I got sober, right? So having a sponsee that has a lot more time has been a very interesting thing, but is also like helped reinforce the fundamentals and like really brought me back to the basics with what we're doing here. But, you know, I am selfish. I am self-centered. So I'm going to jump back to talking about me and not him right now. And, you know, you must be at the bottom of your list of people to ask right now since I got a call. So I'm guessing service is rotating soon, right? I grew up in Clearfield County, Pennsylvania, which really could be Madison, Virginia. Very, very similar space. I was telling Jesus, we have the same sponsor. We drove out here together tonight, and I was telling him that the area I grew up in it looks the same, like same rolling mountains, right? Same farmland, right? Same people, same faces, you know, same stuff, different day. And that definitely doesn't make me alcoholic, but I'm very familiar with what the area is like, and you know, it's nice to be out here and be able to see, you know, that the answer is not exclusive to any geographic region. So, you know, a lot of these things that I'm about to talk about don't make me alcoholic, right? But growing up, like a lot of people, like nervous, anxious, right? Worried about what you're thinking about me. In kindergarten, I can remember that I had some lines, and I'm like, I know to my soul, like as soon as I say what I'm supposed to say, everyone here is going to laugh at me. Not with me, not at, you know, the cute whatever. It's like they're gonna be like, yeah, this kid, sucker, you know. And like my great grandmother's in the audience, and she's like feeding them to me, and I'm just like paralyzed with fear. You know, that's 5 years old. The other thing that I can say was going on at like 5 years old is that I've noticed growing up that a lot of the people in my family that seemed to have the most fun were the people that were drinking. Right, I didn't have a lot of exposure to, you know, things that maybe people do in a large metropolitan area, right? I had a lot of, like, family reunions, family birthdays, family this, family that. baptism party, wedding, whatever, right? But like the people that had the most fun at these things were always the ones that were drinking. And it was like, I want to be like that, you know? Like they were always like laughing harder than everyone, faster than everyone. They were sweating a little bit sooner, right? But like they could dance and they didn't care what anyone thought. And everyone seemed to love them. They'd gravitate to them. And it was just like, you know, why wouldn't I want to be like that? That's freedom, you know? That's absolute freedom, and I can see what they're doing to get it. And it's something I wanted, but, you know, 5, 6, 7, I'm not that resourceful at this point. I can't get that. And I can remember the first time I did get to drink beer. I can't tell you my first piece of chocolate cake, right? I can't tell you my first Christmas present that I unwrapped on my own. I can't tell you about the first a lot of things. I can tell you every single detail about the first time I was allowed to have a sip of beer, though. You know, I was in the living room of my parents' house. My Uncle Mark was sitting next to the entryway to the living room in a chair. It looks like the chair that I think everyone had. It has that like weird plaid, like orange and red pattern to it, and the thick wood on the side, right? And he's sitting in that. My dad's over in another chair, and they have these frosted mugs that they pull out of the freezer because my dad kept two of them in the freezer all the time. And it was, you know, he'd get it out, it'd be ice cold. He'd pour the beer in it. There'd be a little bit of ice on the beer from the glass being so cold, and it all condensed on the outside. You could see the handprint after he'd let go, you know, on the glass. And they were sitting there, and I went up to my Uncle Mark, and I went to ask him if I could have a sip. And I just can't get it out. Like, I'm like, and he's like, just spit it out. And I just like, can I have a sip of beer? You know, and he's like, sure, you know, hands it to me. And like, I took a sip. I can remember, like, you know, the feeling of the cold, the wet hitting my lips, you know, the bitter taste going down. And like, it was like, this is what guys do, you know, like, this is cool. I'm hanging with my dad. I'm hanging with my uncle. You know, that's cool. This is pretty great. Now, I couldn't finish that beer. I could only have that sip, right? But, and I can't say that, you know, as a 6, 7-year-old, wherever I was at that time, I can't even tell you how old I was, but I can remember everything else. It's not like it was off to the races at that point. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm in third grade trying to figure out how to stop somewhere and put it in my backpack or anything. But it was like I got to sample freedom that day. And there are a lot of different ways that I tried to find it. And just couldn't, you know, growing up in a small area and being that nervous, being that, feeling that different, because there's a difference between being that different and feeling that different, right? Because my feelings aren't facts, even though my head will want to tell me that they are. So feeling different than everyone else, and like I needed to find something else, made life pretty unbearable for a long time, and, you know, also really made me an easy target because I had such an extreme reaction to things around me, you know. You have a class of only 90 kids in a grade, though. Like, you're going to become that kid kind of quick, right? So it was also, as I started to get older and want more relief, that, you know, my parents split up again. Like, doesn't make me alcoholic, but makes me start to see a way that I can manipulate people emotionally, right? Like, oh, I've got some good hooks to throw out there, you know? Like, I'm going to get her sympathy for me. I'm going to get this teacher to give me a later deadline, right? I'm going to, like, really use this to the best of my ability to get people to, like, maybe treat me different, act different, whatever, and really bend to my will. And like, even before that, super manipulative, and selfish. The story's just jumping out. So guys are going for a ride. It was, I think, 1988. I was in third grade. And there was a game that came out, and I really wanted this game, and like, knowing that if I presented it a certain way, I would get my way, I went to my grandmother, my Nana, right? And I was like, Nana, you need to help me. She's like, what's wrong? I'm like, if I don't get back to school on Monday with The Legend of Zelda, like, I know that Brian is going to laugh at me. And, like, I couldn't have that. I made this crisis, right? And, like, pulled on it. And we ended up driving 65 miles that day to a store to find it for me so that I would be okay to start the week, you know? And I just... brat. Really? You know? Let's call it what it is. And was relentless in the pursuit of it, you know? And that kind of energy that I would put into that, I would carry through my drinking, you know, and getting things, looking for something on the outside, really, to make me okay, is what I was doing through this time. You know, when you're young, it's going to look like that. As you get older, it looks like different things, right? It's relationships, it's a job, it's a title, whatever nonsense my head is going to make it up to be that time. So I didn't drink for a long time. I it's funny, I was a kid that looked down on people that drink. I was like, oh, I'm not, like, I idolized the freedom that came to people that drank. But at the same time, like, I needed to find a way to make myself better than all of you to feel equal to you, you know? So if that was by making it that, like, I don't drink, so I'm better than you, you know, so I can now be among you. That's the face that it took. And I, you know, it's funny, here I am now speaking at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I didn't drink for a long time, you know, made it through high school. And finally in high school, I ended up joining the Army Reserve. Okay. And it was in the Army Reserve that, like, I was able to start getting access to alcohol the way that I wanted to have access to it, right? And the first time I got drunk was at Fort Pickett, Virginia. It's probably like 100 miles from here or something. So it was at the end of our 2 weeks of annual training. And while we were there, my squad leader asked me what I wanted. I worked really hard for 2 weeks. You know, I'd drink on the weekends at drill, but, like, it wasn't the way I wanted to necessarily, right? There were always people, like, watching the way I was drinking, and it was just, like, it's kind of annoying. Because they would take it from me, they would hide it from me, you know, and I'm going into offices at my reserve center, like I'm Elliot Ness, just like dumping cabinets, looking for the bottle they hid from me. It's already something abnormal about the way I drink, right? Like, seasoned drinkers look at me and are like, we need to take it from him. So my squad leader got me a six-pack, and it was, being a tough soldier, a six-pack of Mike's Hard Lemonade. And I sat on the front porch of the barracks that evening, and I drank it before it could get warm, and I was good and drunk that night, and that night was definitely the night that the pursuit began. I felt connected with everyone in that unit. I found a bond with people that I had been searching for forever, you know? I sat across from Sergeant Elliot, and we were talking. He's drunk, I'm drunk. We're just pouring it out there, like, we're in this for life, you know, like, we're going to stay until we retire and, like, all this stuff. And it's just, like, I felt like I finally got, like, I arrived, right? Like, I was where I was supposed to be. Everything was the way it was supposed to be. Like, worked hard, got to celebrate, you know, got to feel like a bond among everyone. And that was, God, that was great. That was a fantastic night. But the next morning, I got up, and, like, growing up, I had questions about some people's drinking in my family. I'd, like, look at my dad's and later on and be like, it might not be normal the way he does it, right? I got up, and I looked at someone the next day, and I actually had the thought, and I said to them, I'm like, I liked that a lot last night. Like, yeah, you have fun? And I was like, yeah, I did. It's like, I don't know if I liked it too much, though, right? Like, there's just a moment there that I asked that question. And just as quickly as I asked that question, I dismissed it, you know. how could I like something too much? How could it be too much of a good thing if nothing bad happened to me? And I got to feel that great, you know? Can't be bad for me. Like, I got to laugh a little harder. I got to sweat a little faster. And had there been music, I probably would have danced sooner than everyone else. And just thought that was the most ridiculous thing. I wondered for a minute, you know, kicked it aside. Continued to go on through life, finding every drinking opportunity that I could. I'd find friends that would let me drink the way I wanted to drink. You know, in the house I grew up in, I jokingly called it the awful lawful family. My stepdad was an attorney, my mom his secretary. So there wasn't a lot of, like, wiggle room for being able to, like, get out, do stuff, and act, you know, the way some of my friends did and other people did in school. So really the only place that I could start to do this was on my reserve weekends. But then it started to become, you know, during the week I would, like, hang out with my friends until 5 a.m. because I would go and I'd get drunk with them. And then I'd wait to sober up, and then I would drive home at 5:30 in the morning. Be like, well, I'm alive. Nothing happened. I didn't get arrested. We're good, right? And it would make my parents upset to no end. You know, they were always mad with me being out that much. And it was a lot of that. It was like trying to just find every opportunity that I could, right? I was an absolute menace to people. I was still, you know, I went from the kid that was bullied in school to becoming a bully myself, you know, among my peers. An absolute nightmare of a person to work with. One thing I can definitely say, you know, when I looked at my fifth step and when I looked at the amends that I had to have made later on, all the stuff I did that ended up on paper, I didn't have a single drop of alcohol in me when I did any of it. Like, that's me. That's me with no solution. You know, that's me not drunk. That's just the guy I am, you know. When I'm in the middle of my sickness. So I end up turning 21, a little bit different, right? Like, on paper, legally, I can do this. And my parents don't have too much to say at this point now because, you know, I don't care what you say. It's Tuesday and I'm 21, you know, or it's Thursday, I'm 21, or whatever day, I'm 21. What happened was I went out 10 nights in a row. And the only reason I remember it was 10 nights is, like, you know, I'm like, yeah, this is good. You know, night one was great. Night two was great. Like, I can do this 6 nights in a row. Night 10 comes around and I start calling my friends. And I was like, hey, where do you guys want to go tonight? And everyone's saying, like, oh, I'm going to stay home. Oh, I'm tired. Oh, I have to work tomorrow. And they're giving all these reasons. And, like, that list is getting shorter and the people I'm willing to hang out with, you know, starts becoming a little bit greater, you know, like, my preference of who I want to hang with. And, like, oh, well, they're not the best, but, I mean, they might say yes, right? And I get down to my friend Kristen, and I call her, and I was like, hey, do you want to go out tonight? And she's like, no. I'm like, what is going on with everyone? Like, why doesn't anyone want to go out tonight? What is this? And she said, what you're doing isn't normal. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, people don't drink like you're drinking. And we're worried about you, and we're not going to go out with you. Well, I'll just see who's already out there then, you know. Forget finding anyone. There's going to be someone else there. And I went out that night, and I hung out with other people, you know. Because I'm not going to let anything get in the way of me doing this, you know. Now that it seems like I can control this, right? I can do it when I want to, and it just happens to be a lot, and you're kind of lame because you don't want to. That's your problem. You want life to be this boring? Like, okay. So, you know, friends start to change some. I'm hanging out with some people less. I'm hanging out with other people more. Start to slide down the scale as, you know, as far as the reputation of the people I'm willing to spend my time with. And I end up going, I go to college. I'm doing miserable in college, right? I get 4 Fs and a D one semester. I'm put on the list, the list of, like, you need to get straight A's for, like, 4 semesters in a row or you're going to get dropped. You know, I can't, I'm living in a house. I went to school at Penn State, and I'm living in a house, townhouse, with 5 other guys. My rent was $187.50 a month. That's not a lot of money. You know, I'm getting at least at this time, like, between $600 and $700 a month from the Army Reserve. And I can't even afford to pay my rent, but I can go out that night. You know, I can always go out that night. I cannot get my rent together, though. Like, hey, Jeff, can you cover it this time? You know, okay. I'll get you in 2 weeks after I have drill. You know, I'll get you paid then. Just constantly juggling things, you know, running credit card bills up, amassing all of this debt, not going to class, just laying in bed and thinking about how sad the world is, you know. I just not go to school because everything's too sad all of a sudden, you know. But by the time the sun goes down, we're going to make it right tonight, you know. I'm going to tie one on. I'm going to relax one more time and, like, have the gusto I need finally to start tomorrow, you know. But tonight, I need to exhale, you know. I was dating some girl at the time, you know, that, so that ends, I get kicked out of school also, all at the same time. And what starts to happen is for the next 3 months, I get into this cycle. When I was finally kicked out, that's when that relationship ended. And it was a cycle of wake up, throw up. Wake up at like 10, 11, throw up first thing in the morning, right? And then hang on and not drink until at least 5 o'clock. Because, like, if you're drinking before 5, like, someone's going to say something. You know, someone is going to tell me, like, what you're doing isn't normal, you know. And, like, thank you for your unsolicited opinion. So I got to hang on until, like, 5 o'clock to start to drink again. And then I'd get drunk, and then I'd pass out with my cat next to me. And I'd wake up, I'd throw up, I'd hang on till 5 o'clock, continue, you know, over and over and over for 3 months. I end up getting a job, a full-time job, so it looks on the outside like circumstances are getting better, right? Like, I'm on an upward trajectory. It's like the only way you can go at this point, really, though. But my drinking never slows down because now I don't have any school expenses, right? So, like, this income isn't my income. You know, forget those jokers from Discover Card that are calling me every day at, like, 8:30 in the morning. You know, they don't need that yet. They don't understand they don't need that money and that I really do, you know? I'd gotten out of the service at this time also, you know, thinking that that was a problem. And then eventually I went back in because I thought not being in was a problem, you know, again, never realizing that, like, I'm doing all this stuff on the outside, right, to try and make me feel right. And, like, nothing's working. During that 3 months, I started to talk to a counselor at the school. I would start periodically, like, trying to go to church more. You know, I was raised in a faith. I went regularly every Sunday, you know, went to Sunday school, all of that. Grew up in a religious house and, like, would try to seek that. And, like, that wouldn't fix me, right? The counselor wouldn't fix me. Now, granted, I wasn't 100% truthful with them either. You know, and I don't know if anyone's ever tried that, you know, given someone, like, selective pieces and expecting to get better. You know, it's like if I went to a doctor today and I told them that I have a headache, but, like, I really know that I'm bleeding out, like, they're going to give me something for a headache and I'm going to continue to die because I'm not telling them what the problem really is, you know? And that's how I was when I would go to these counselors. I'd tell them something and, like, I would definitely try to, like, get that sympathy card going. I remember when one told me, like, I feel so bad, I just want to hug you. And I'm thinking, like, yes, like, got them, you know, like, just got that image painted for them, you know. I was just so happy with that I was able to convince them how pathetic I was. But, you know, things started to look better. And as they started to look better, you know, with that, I just continued to behave a certain way. And I continued to watch people go through that school and graduate, and I would laugh because, like, my place was downtown at the bar, right? I had a crew of friends that we would meet every day at 6 o'clock down at this bar called The First. I had my own mug. It had its number on it. They knew what number to get. And meanwhile, people are graduating. They're getting a degree, right? And I'm thinking, like, you suckers don't know life, you know? But what am I doing? I'm just hanging out, working, doing absolutely nothing with my life, thinking I've got it figured out. And I know the real answer to everything, you know, because at this point, you know, I've got that mug and everything. I get to skip the line on Friday and Saturday night. I get to go to my table. My table's there. No one's sitting at it. If there's someone sitting at it, they promptly leave because I'm there with my crew, right? And I feel like I'm, like, king of the world. But at this time, you know, I've gotten up to, like, 230 pounds, you know. It hurts walking downstairs. You know, I am a nightmare at work. No one wants to work with me. I just caused problem after problem in the advertising department of this newspaper. And finally, I'm like, let go from that job. And it's like, oh, God, here we go. You know, I end up finding a different job. I was working for Home Depot then. And, you know, I would go into work. I ended up doing the bookkeeping, right? So there's a little room. It's like the size of that kitchen at Home Depot. And that's where they do all the bookkeeping and count the money and everything, right? I worked in that room by myself. I worked in that room for 4 years. And within the first 6 months of that job, I had a reputation, the guy that's not interacting with the general public, of having, like, the worst temper on earth, you know? Because I couldn't drink at that job or anything, you know? And, again, like, who I am without Alcoholics Anonymous as a solution and without alcohol as a solution, too, is an absolute terrible human being to be around. And the best example I can think while in that job was that there was this time that we had a Christmas party going on, and they were talking about having it at a location that didn't serve alcohol. And I'm like, this is not going to stand. Like, Ken Radzetta does not go to a party where there's no booze, you know? And if you want me to help with this, I'm going to make sure it's at a place that they serve it. And I find a place, it's a nice joint and all of that. And at the party, I proceed to do what I do. I just get drunk. I get real drunk. And I'm starting to laugh. I'm having a good time. I'm being like the people I admired when I was growing up. And the next day at work, my boss looks at me. And he's like, what was that? I'm like, what are you talking about, Jeff? And he's like, you were funny. You were, like, nice to everyone. You had a good time. People enjoyed your company. Why can't you do that all the time? And I looked at him dead in the eye, and I go, Jeff, if you would let me drink at work, I could be like that. You know? And, like, that doesn't register to me, though. That doesn't even seem to be a strange thing for me to say. Like, you know, the days that I would drink at lunch at 10:30 in the morning. Like, it's my lunch, so it's okay, you know. I'd go to Wegmans, and they had a bar there. Or not a bar, but they served beer there, and you could get it and have it with your food, whatever. So I'd do that occasionally. And, like, at this time, too, in talking about controlling circumstances, right, being in a college town, it's, like, the best camouflage on earth for an alcoholic, you know, if you care to have camouflage. Not everyone does, right? Because you can continue getting older, but if you're the guy with the party, like, no one cares, you know? Like, no one in their early 20s is going to care. You are always going to find people that want to show up. And if you can control the circumstances like I wanted to make it look like what I was doing was acceptable, then you're good. You know, I don't have to worry about these people saying, like, hey, man, that's weird what you're doing, right? Because they're kind of at that point they want to do that too, or I find the ones that want to do that at least. I guess there are ones that study and they do well and get on the dean's list. That wasn't me for a long time. So I would find these people, and, like, I was really into tailgating. I don't watch football. I never attended a single game, but I tailgated for 5 years. Because you know what you can do at a tailgate? You can go into the middle of a field at 7 in the morning with a case of Yingling in your cooler and just start knocking them back, and no one looks at you funny, you know? Like, the best place for me. I love the fall. Like, you know, get nice and drunk. It's September. It's still kind of hot out, so what do? I go and I crawl under my Jeep Wrangler, and I go to sleep for a little bit because that sun's a little too much, you know, and no one else is crawling under their car up there. There's 110,000 people. I'm probably the only one sleeping under a car because I don't want to be in the sun passed out. And I lived like an animal, you know. And And it was easy to have the camouflage of being in a university environment, too, because everyone else is leaving every 4 years, right? Like, people are cycling out that door regularly, probably about the time they're sick of me, like, really good and sick of me. They've moved on, you know. They go to that next chapter, and I stay right there, and I find the next group of suckers to bring on board. And present an image that's not entirely accurate to them, you know, character. Because during all of this, while I feel like I'm, you know, I'm trying to look like I'm king of this town, you know, deep down inside, nothing's making me right. I'm worthless. God's abandoned me, you know. If you would feel the way I do, you'd want to drink the way I drink if you had my life, right? Like, I didn't want to fail out, you know, but I did, you know. And it was my attitude towards God was a lot of like, I'm in this corner and they better stay in that corner, because if they come over, I'm going to hit them in the mouth, right? Like, I want nothing to do with it. Nothing has gone on that I've wanted to really have happen for me. And the truth is, well, all I want to have happen for me is like get a paycheck with no work, right? Like, I don't want to do anything to put myself, I don't want to do any work in my life, but I certainly want the rewards. I want the image of someone that's an accomplished individual, but I don't want to do anything for it. Finally, I end up getting back into school, and with that, I graduated. And honestly, like, it's funny. When I graduated, I wrote a letter to the president of the university that morning before commencement, and I outlined this, like, epic tale of going to school, failing out, coming back, and like owning it and all of that. Honestly, this is all I did. As much as like I was impressed with myself at that time, I did my homework and I studied. Like, I did what someone else told me to do. And I didn't understand how that worked to my benefit for the time that I was in school. And I wouldn't understand how listening to someone else's ideas would really work and work for me until I got here, right? And I can look back and say, I kind of had an academic sponsor, right? They're called teachers. You generally do what the teacher says, right? It's going to work out. You kind of do what your sponsor says here. It's going to work out, right? Life picks up, and then things go kind of crazy again. And what happens is I was in this relationship. You know, I met this girl at a wedding, and the first thing my friends said to me was, they were like, hey, you're probably going to like Rachel. I was like, really? And they're like, why? And they're like, she likes to drink the way you drink. I'm like, fascinating, you know? Tell me more about her. And, you know, we strike up conversation. We end up dating for a while. Kind of like everyone else before her, she catches on, right? She's done with me. Before she's done with me, we get to this point where she's talking about her drinking. And she's like, she's like, I think I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, whoa, hey, maybe like a lowercase a alcoholic, right? But we don't want to say like capital A alcoholic, because guess who wants to hang out with you and you change that. I'm going to have no. So she dumps me, and rightfully so. And before she does that, she says, this was in January 2013. And she goes, I'm going to try to do a dry February, shortest month of the year, right? And I'm like, okay. I'm like, you know, I'll try to do that too. Because, like, I got to trick her, right? I got to look supportive. I got to look like I'm in it with you, even though you said I don't want you in it with me, you know? And I go to do this, and that weekend I go out. And, you know, alcohol gave me a lot of relief through all of this. I talked a lot about stuff that wasn't drinking. But, like, the problem, and the book talks about this, like, drinking's but a symptom, right? The problem's in here. It's centered in my mind. All those decisions I made certainly didn't make me drink, but I felt like I needed to drink because of my decisions, right? It's what got me out of me and was able to give me a connection to something greater, because alcohol was my higher power. So we both agree that the first weekend, because of what had just happened between us, we have a free pass to drink still. So shortest month of the year, you know, already trying to say you're not going to drink during that and giving yourself a free pass the first weekend of it. Are you even really able to put, you know, 26, 27 days together, whatever 13 was, 2013 was? So I stopped drinking on February 3rd. Well, 2nd was a Groundhog's Day, right? Getting ready to go down that tube again, because that's what my life looked like for a lot of this, you know, that whole wake-up, throw-up cycle. Because I know what happened the last time, that things were kind of teed up like this, where a relationship ended and I was, you know, going to go somewhere pretty bad. What ended up happening was I stopped, right? God, whatever you want to say, your higher power is somewhere in me. Maybe it was just my own willpower for as long as it could last, right? Like, I was able to stop. And when normal people stop drinking, generally it looks like things get better for them. I know other people that have quit. They're not in the program. Just they're like, wasn't doing anything for me, you know? Needed to slow down. Whatever. When I stop drinking, it is crazy town. You know, it is absolute crazy town. I seek a therapist again. I'm going weekly, and it's nuts. I feel like a man losing his mind because I don't have an answer anymore. It's weird. I put this thing together, my life, in a way that if you asked a kid to draw a blueprint of a ship, right, that kid would draw something. You could generally say, like, that looks like a ship, but I know that's not really how you would put one together, right? Because they'd have a concept. And what I did during this time was I looked up the 12 steps. And I remember reading them, and I was thinking, like, okay, this works for people. I'm an intelligent guy. I just graduated from this place. I wrote that awesome letter to the president of the university. And I read the steps. I picked what I wanted. And really, it looked like I needed to start calling a bunch of people and saying I'm sorry. You know, that's what I latched on to. But I was seeing a therapist. I started going to church regularly. I had a friend I was calling every day, right? Sound familiar? Maybe a little. Getting their advice on things, you know. But, like, it's just not clicking. Like, it is a high idol, and I am not in first gear, you know. And February 3rd, 2013 is my sobriety date. Between then and July 3rd, 2013, I had 5 months of no participation in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had not gone to a meeting for myself at this point. So living in Pennsylvania, what happens is in April, I moved to Laurel, Maryland. And while I'm there, you know, she lives down this way. That's part of my higher power has a sense of humor. And kind of uses my defects to my advantage sometimes to get me to do the things I'm really not willing to do. And I really think that's how I got here. Because what happens is during this time, we're not talking at all or anything, and I'm dry and I'm getting, like, crispy. It's kindling, right? Like, you dry it out real good, because when a match gets near it, like, it's going to go. She ends up coming to Alcoholics Anonymous before I do, right? She quit drinking. She could not stop. I didn't know this. And what ends up happening is she and I are talking, and I know that she's an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I moved down to Laurel, Maryland, because I am still trying to salvage this thing. And she asks me to go to a meeting for her to pick up her 90-day chip. And I go, sure, I'll go with you. I want to be the good supportive guy, right? She can look at and be like, look at this white knight move down here, you know. There's nothing about me being a white knight, like, or anything not being rusted, including my car that is a mess, right? Like, it's just a mess. And I'm trying to figure out AA. I start going to another fellowship. While I'm there, I get sponsors. I get a sponsor there that's also an AA. And I seem like I'm able to connect with this guy. Like, it's a little weird. Like, that's interesting. You know, I can talk. I feel comfortable with this. You know, he kind of shares some of himself. I'll be honest with him. That seems okay. And I'm talking to her on the phone, and I go, I'm really trying to understand AA. And she goes, well, why don't you read the big book, right? Now, if my mom ever said to me, why don't you read the big book, I would have been like, click, you know. My friends had told me that, I would have found other friends, right? If a boss, if my anyone in the army, anybody basically on the planet had told me to read the big book, except her, I would have promptly displayed one of my fingers. But I said, yes, sure, I'll check it out. And I to this day, believe that my higher power knew that that's how I was going to start to see what we have here. So I go online and I find a PDF of the big book. I read that thing in 2 days, right? And I'm going through it, and I read Bill's, and I skip the doctor's opinion and all of that, because, like, books are on chapter one, right? No one's telling me how to read this thing. So I go to chapter one, I'm reading Bill's story, and, like, I'm looking at, like, okay, yeah, he was getting ready to go to war. Okay, he went, but I didn't. I kind of relate. Yeah, I get that. And as I'm reading, it's like, by the time I'm at chapter three, I'm like, oh, man, I can relate to this. Like, it's not good. And what I understood on that day that I read the book, and I talked about third grade, right, the kid that wanted the game. I can remember third grade. And the reason I bring this up, my sponsor asked me at one point, when did it start? And I go, what do you mean? And he goes, when did the act begin? And I knew exactly what he was talking about then. And I said, third grade, you know, when the question began, why? I screwed stuff up. My mom came home with a big brown grocery bag full of all the stuff I was not bringing home for her to see. Slams it down as I'm getting ready for bed. And she goes, what is this? And I don't know. And between then and the day I read the big book, I finally had the answer for I don't know. And the answer was, I have alcoholism. I didn't know what that meant exactly, but, like, the book spoke to my core reading it. So what do you do if you have alcoholism? I guess you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been to that meeting with her. She has a family member in the program. I call that family member up because they lived in the town that I was living in. And I was like, hey, Kate, you know that meeting I was with you guys on Wednesday? And she goes, did you like it? I'm like, is it that time every Wednesday at that location? And she's like, yes, it is. Okay, I'll be there. So I go to a meeting, and that was the meeting I went to on July 3rd, 5 months to the day from when I quit drinking. And it was uncomfortable. I held that thing hostage at the last minute. I shared and was just like, oh, here I am, you know, and God bless those people for being patient with me that evening. I mean, I didn't keep it after the time it was supposed to end, but I definitely talked a lot at the end. And I ran out of there as fast as I could. I wasn't getting one. And no one wants your numbers. This thing's an hour a day. What do you need that for, you know? So I talked to her. She tells me about her home group. And I'm like, okay, I'll give this a shot. And I start to think, well, I'll show up around my anniversary every month. I'll check in once a month. That's cute, you know. And I go the last Sunday of the month to what became my home group, Midtown. It was at Bethesda Chevy Chase High School at that time. And I walk in, and it is absolute chaos to me. It is 350, at that time it was like 400 or 450 people. All of them are smiling. You know, I remember this one guy, Coop, is in the greeting line, and he smiles real big, and he's got this big old grin on. He's like, how you doing, buddy? And I see him, and I, like, want to go to his teeth the way a five-year-old takes to piano keys and just hit him over and over because I can't stand how happy he is. Like, shut that grin up, you know? I don't want anyone bothering me. And unbeknownst to me, I am, like, broadcasting help me, because I go over to a wall, I stand next to the wall, I cross my arms, I put one foot against it, I lean back, and I'm just, like, mean mugging everyone I can. And this guy, Jason, comes up to me, and he's like, how you doing? And I'm like, I'm all right, how are you? And he starts to talk to me and tells me that he, you know, was in the service at one point, because I told him I'm in the Army Reserve. And then this other guy, Isaac, comes up, and Isaac's like, so what brings you here? And I'm thinking, like, what is this? Like, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here because I eat too many Cheerios, right? Like, what brings you here? What winner did I just meet, you know? Just like totally hostile towards everyone that just wants to help me. Because if you can see I need help, I hate you. I hate you so much because you see how broken I know I am. And, oh, I can't trick you. I can't trick any of you, you know? And I need relief for that, you know? I need to be able to drink. Luckily, I didn't. You know, I ended up doing something that got me here eventually, and that's saying yes just enough. People told me, get a sponsor. I get a sponsor, right? It was that guy Jason that started talking to me. And he made this place totally safe for me. He really did. And you want to make it safe for me and ask me about me, I will fire you. So 3 weeks into him sponsoring me, he wanted to know a little too much about me. Had to get rid of him, so see you later. I'll figure it out. Thank you. And what happened was people continued to do what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy named Mike then said, hey, man, instead of trying to do this on your own, why don't you at least talk to me for now? And I was like, okay. So I call him and, you know, start to work with him. And then I eventually find someone that I asked to be my sponsor. And they were my sponsor for my first year. And I tell you, the people after you get your first year will say, you know, year one is a gift. And I always felt like return to sender. Thank you. And that was really just because of like how belligerent I was and how much I wanted to resist doing all of this. You know, as I started to go through the steps, it certainly wasn't easy. I finally got to a point where I was able to find a higher power, right? Like one, two, and three. I said yes to them without really understanding what they meant, right? Four and five with that sponsor that I had for a year, and then the subsequent ones after him. It was difficult the very first time I did it, right? Because, like, I'd given people pieces of the truth for a long time, but I didn't, like, give them the whole truth, right? I didn't want to do that. Because if you knew all of it, like, I knew what was coming. I knew what was coming, right? Like, the people that had the whole truth in the past, like, those were the people that dumped me, right? Those were the people that didn't want to talk to me anymore. Those were the people that fired me from my job because they had enough of the truth, right? I knew if I was going to tell the sponsor person, like, it was going to be, all right, here we go. Find someone else to talk to or get to prove you guys wrong, right? And I went over and I spilled everything out. And the first thing he did was he stood up and he opened his arms and he said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he gave me a hug. And he was okay with everything I told him. Like all of it. Like all of it. We continued to work together. And I changed, you know, and I had someone else for a while. And, you know, the things that I've learned here continue to blow me away, right? I stand here now with 6 years, and I am sure that 6 years from now, if I am still doing this, I'll look back at what I said tonight and probably laugh. If I even thinking about it then, and hopefully I'm not dwelling about this meeting 6 years from now. But you would get it if I did. One of the things that I've thought about a lot lately and that I love about the program is that this is a design for living. Practicing these principles in all my affairs, right? I often hear a lot of people talk about different AA events, different AA things that go on, and you'll hear a lot of, well, that's not AA, right? And for me, right now, at this point in my life, in my sobriety, I don't know what isn't AA. I'm at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, where we talk about the program and how it works. Alcoholics Anonymous is my life. It's what I'm doing at work. It's what I'm doing with my family. It's what I'm doing with my friends. It's what I'm doing with my higher power when it's just the two of us, you know? And when I want to narrow the scope which I'm willing to allow this program to encompass, all I'm doing is finding a way to cut myself off from what my higher power is capable of including in my life. When I want to start to piecemeal the things that I'm willing to hand to this program, what I'm really starting to say is, I got this. And one of the worst things that I've had to watch other friends of mine go through are the people that say, I'm willing to hand over my alcoholism, and that's it. And I watch those people, and I know them, and I see them get sicker. I watch these people, and I know them, and they end up, you know, close to death, dying. And I really have to give it all. I got to jump into this thing with both feet, right? I have to go all out in AA, because AA is my life. I don't have the privilege of getting to choose what it includes, because if I do that, I don't know what I just said no to. And it should have been the thing that I really needed to say yes to that time. I have no idea what the thing's going to be that's going to get me drunk. And I'll close with this. There's a guy that I judged the crap out of for a long time at this meeting I went to when I had 2 years, because I had it figured out then. And he seemed nuts. He seemed a wreck. You know, he had 30 years. And I was like, good God, this is what you've got, you know? Because that's who I am. I'm judgy, right? But the first time I ever heard him say it, and he said it at every meeting he went to, and it rattles me at my cage, and it's absolutely true. He's like, I know I've got one more drunk in me. I can get drunk. Not a problem. He'd say, I don't know if I have another sobriety, you know? And when I was living in Laurel, I'd walk up and down the streets, and I had to walk by 2 bars and a liquor store. And I knew, I was just terrified. I was like, I know what's going to happen. It's only a matter of time, you know? And God put that person in my life to say, why don't you check out the big book, right? Because, like, I was walking up and down those streets, and I knew I'm going to go in. I know I'm going to go in, and I know it's going to happen. I'm going to get in my car that night. I'm going to go on 95 because I'm nuts, right? Like, I'd like stone sober during those 5 months, right? Dry. I'm driving up and down 95, closing my eyes for 3-5 seconds at a time. I don't want to die, but, hey, let's see if we can get a sympathy story going, you know? That's me without AA. Where I am today with AA as a solution in my life, though, I have a very fulfilling life. I absolutely love my career. It's one that I wouldn't be able to have without it. I have friends that are willing to get in a car with me and drive 96 miles to Madison, Virginia, you know. I have people that ask me to come to Madison, Virginia, you know, to speak. And I get to be part of what guys like Frank and Mike started. I get to participate in a legacy and, you know, share with the guy that I'm sponsoring now. And, you know, with that, I'm absolutely grateful that someone with 27 years asked me to sponsor them, because in the end, it comes down to, have we prayed? Do we have service? Did you help someone? You know, how many meetings are you going to? And in that, I get the comfort of seeing that in 21 more years, like, that prescription doesn't change, right? It's consistent. And there's a lot of comfort that can come with consistency. I don't have to get caught up in doing it 21 years from now. I just need to do it today, tonight, and I get to do it with all of you. Thank you very much for asking me to be here tonight. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm Sam. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sam.
And thank you so much for your talk. And it gives us the opportunity to see ourselves in your story. I'm going to pass around.